Hello, and welcome to the Love Me A Vita podcast, sponsored by Femme Pharma. I'm Jerry DiPiano, founder and CEO. Thank you for joining us as we discuss all aspects of women's healthcare. Please note, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Always refer to your healthcare practitioner for personal advice. So I want to welcome Dr. Mona Hardis to the Love Me A Vita podcast. Dr. Hardis is a board-certified gynecologist, and she is a specialist in cosmetic gynecology. Did I miss anything, Dr. Hardis?
No.
And Dr. Hardis and I are going to discuss today, what is cosmetic gynecology? I think we have a good idea as to what that entails, but since Dr. Hardis is the expert, we want her to share with our audience more about cosmetic gynecology, the various types of procedures, and then who is a candidate for cosmetic gynecology. So let's start off with, what is cosmetic gynecology, Dr. Hardis?
Hi, thank you again for inviting me and helping me spread the word about cosmetic gynecology. Now, this is a subspecialty of gynecology where we address not only the aesthetic needs of a woman, but also functional needs, which could be pain, discomfort, extra tissue, less amount of tissue. So many reasons for women to approach a cosmetic gynecologist.
And cosmetic gynecology, so obviously we're not talking about procedures of the face, we're talking about procedures of the pelvic and reproductive, or I should say the genitalia, correct?
Yes, absolutely, yes. No,
that's okay, go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying that this cosmetic gynecology is such a misleading name. It's not just cosmetics. Of course, we want the area to look good and we answer some of the concerns regarding aesthetics, but it's more about the functionality of the vagina and vulva and genital areas.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, because when one thinks about cosmetic, the word cosmetic, one thinks about the aesthetics of it. And obviously there are procedures that will address the aesthetics, but I think it's an important distinction that you make, that this does mean that it can help structure and function.
Yes.
So I'm just curious, when you decided to go into medicine, why did you choose cosmetic gynecology or gynecology period?
You know, I was always interested in gynecology and women's health in general. When I went in medicine, in the third year and fourth year of medical school, you do your rotations. And gynecology really, I did my rotation and it's like, this is it. This is what I want to do. I am a very big proponent of women's health and women's right kind of a person. And I'm like, this is perfect for me. So I went in gynecology thinking that I'm going to help women. I love delivering babies, doing surgeries, all that. But cosmetics was nowhere in my radar. I was not even thinking about it till I went in practice. When I finished my residency training, got my board certification, started working as a general OBGYN, I started seeing women, a lot of their concerns I had no answer for. Traditional gynecological residency training never addresses. We learn to treat a problem, we learn to treat a disease process, but never we were trained in answering, at least when I trained in at that time, we were never answering women with concerns regarding labia, like a hypertrophy, excessive tissue, women who had, say, femur circumcision that had no tissue, women in menopause or perimenopause, and the concern which come with that stage of life. So when my patients started coming to me looking for answers, I had no answers. And that's what made me like, okay, there has to be a way of getting trained, finding it out, what I can do to help these women. That's how I got kind of attracted to the cosmetic gynecology.
Very interesting. And I would imagine you mentioned female circumcision and some of this is cultural, and unfortunately, these are the same women that then when they are, when they decide that they want a partner, things may be challenging for them from a sexual intimacy perspective. And
Right.
so that really does give them some hope and some sexual self-confidence. And we know that if your sexual self-confidence is eroded, that can have a profound impact on a woman as she loses her agency. And these procedures, I believe, are performed when a woman is relatively young. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. The child has no say in it. They don't even consent to it. It's mostly, I think, it's religious or cultural, whatever it is called. So when I went in practice, the area I was practicing, there was a large subset of these women who, unfortunately, in their childhood, had circumcision, or we call FGM right now, right? Procedure done. And then one patient comes to me, and she has obviously she can't have penetrative sex because the opening is so small, it is so tight, there is no labia left, and she's in a lot of pain. And she's married now and can't enjoy sex. And here I was, I had no training. And she's the one looking at her inspired me to actually go and look for the more training and what I can do. And it's not a training program out there for any of these procedures we do, which will answer all these questions. So I went to several different people, several different places, and finally ended up doing a master's training. And once the word comes out and you help one woman with that problem, you see more and more of that. And that's how my practice started.
You shared this with me in a previous conversation, and I'm happy that you opened up to share this with those that are listening in, because I love the fact that you were inspired to do this because you saw this woman, this patient of yours that was suffering. And there are probably many other women who have had some sort of procedure done to them, perhaps when they were younger, or perhaps they had a vaginal delivery, which ended up in a traumatic delivery where there were multiple episiotomy scars, etc. So it's not just what I will call, these types of procedures that are done for cultural reasons, but we know that women historically have had traumatic births. Maybe they were delivered with high forceps. So those are the same types of women I would imagine that you would help with these types
Yes.
of procedures.
Yes. One of the procedures I do is called a vaginoplasty or a perineoplasty. Now, vaginoplasty is basically helping either tighten the vagina. Tightening the vagina not only will increase your sexual satisfaction, but a lot of time after multiple childbirth or because of chronic constipation, chronic cough, the pelvic muscles are not strong enough to hold your bladder or your rectum. And there's a little bit of what we call prolapse of the bladder or the rectum, which gives you incontinence, increasing constipation, bulge in the vagina, right? Causing discomfort during sex. So all these symptoms can be treated or can be corrected by doing a vaginoplasty procedure surgically. So perineum is the area between the vagina and the rectum. And a lot of time, as you mentioned before, the episiotomies or scarring from episiotomy or, tears after childbirth, a lot of time those tears are not even sutured because they are told, the woman is told, oh, it will heal up. Well, it heals up, but then the muscles stay separated and they don't come together and there's a gaping. So the opening of the vagina is wider. It goes all the way down to the rectum. So cleaning the area is difficult. And a lot of time, the inside tissue, the inside of the vagina is exposed, which causes burning and pain. So these can be all addressed by doing a procedure we call perineoplasty. So yes, definitely there is help. If there is a concern, you have to see a cosmetic gynecologist who's trained in doing these procedures.
And again, coming back to this is when we think about the cosmetic part of it, this is a very small part of it. Yes, that will
Yes.
probably be an added benefit, but that is not the only or sole reason for these procedures. They're really medical necessity in cases just as the one that you illustrated. I'm curious about your medical school training, and we hear this a lot from professionals like yourself that women's health care, and whether it's in the practice of gynecology or internal medicine or what have you, it's mostly based on the default male. Did you get any of this sort of training in medical school?
Not in my medical school at all, or not even in my residency training, which was just geared towards OBGYN. None of this was taught to us. We were taught if somebody has a prolapse to fix the prolapse. But without even a prolapse, if there is a concern, nobody taught us. It was told, oh no, that's just a part of growing up as a woman gets older. And that's so ingrained in everybody's mind that, oh, you don't need help. No, you need help. If you have a problem, that needs to be addressed. But no training in that at all.
So where did you get this very specialized training that has enabled you to help so many women?
I train with different people. You know, cosmetic gynecology is a small society, and there are few people who are out there who's been doing this. So my training started in California with Dr. Goodman. Dr. Goodman is one of the very well-known cosmetic gynecologists who pioneered one of the labioplasty techniques called a wedge technique. So I went to him, I stayed with him, and I did a hands-off training with him. After that, I came back, started practicing just a part of that labioplasty which I trained. Then I did a master's training program with Dr. Pelosi. He's in New Jersey, and he has a training program where not only it's like, you have the curriculum, but you also do a cadaver lab. You learn on a cadaver first, and then you do a hands-on training with him. And it's a fellowship program, so I would go in every few months and do like a week or two, because I was in practice. I couldn't take the whole year off, so I've trained with him, and those were my two main trainers, I would call them, to help me that. But following that, I did a lot of seminars and hands-on workshops in a different parts of USA to go and actually learn, because there are different people with their different specialties in procedures. So
Sure. And these techniques are really important. So you want to be able to provide your patients with the best and most the optimal result. And so all of the training that you received really is the patient is really the beneficiary. And it really is very heartening to hear you say that because we hear a lot about these types of procedures, and I know many of them are performed in different types of venues, not necessarily in a medical practitioner office, but maybe in a spa or what have you. And that's not to suggest that the individuals that are performing the procedures are not qualified, but I'm imagine that there are credentials that a woman should be looking for if she can if she's considering a procedure of this type. What do you recommend in terms of the selection of a provider?
I would definitely say that, it has to be that an MD or a DO who has gone through medical school training, who I would prefer a gynecologist doing this procedure on me if I wanted one, because as a gynecologist, we are so well versed with the female anatomy. That's all we do all day in and out. So I think a gynecology which who had look at their credentials, see what kind of a training they have had. Have they had a fellowship training? And if it is, then go find out, go on their website, look at their before and after pictures, look at the testimonials from the patient, and that will tell you the story. And that's the person I will go to.
Right. I mean, we know that there are a number of different subspecialties that are performing these procedures. And quite frankly, when I've investigated this, not necessarily for my personal use, but really because we have a line of products that companion well with what I would call the maintenance. After these types of procedures, our MiaVita personal lubricant and vaginal moisturizer companion very well because, of course, you want to extend the benefits of whatever procedure. So, maintaining that mucosa intact after you've had the procedure done is certainly important. So, as I've investigated this, I've noticed a range of different types of individuals who are performing these procedures, some of whom are not board certified gynecologists. They may be specialists in other areas, perhaps plastic surgeons and so forth. And I'm not attempting to denigrate that, but I think that your rationale certainly does make sense. You want someone who's very well versed in the female anatomy and has possibly had some of the specialized training that you have to be able to perfect this as really a science as much as it is an art. I mean, obviously, plastic surgeon, if you're going to have a rhinoplasty nose job, you want to go to someone who's actually done hundreds of them and has done facial plastic surgery. So I can't imagine somebody working on your pelvic and reproductive organs that has never really had the opportunity to work specifically in that region of the body.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. That's why I think a gynecologist is what I would prefer. Because as a plastic surgeon, you work on the entire body. So how many and vaginal procedures have you done, or how well versed are you with that anatomy as compared to gynecologists? It's like me doing a rhinoplasty on somebody. Yes, I went to med school. Yes, I can read about it and do it, but no, that's not what I want. So you really have to pick somebody, you think you're gonna, and also go and visit the person, do it like a televisit or do a virtual call and see how you feel and ask these questions to them, is what I would do before picking a surgeon.
Thank you for that advice. We talk about a variety of different procedures, and I think the vaginal laser rejuvenation procedure has became very, very popular with women. Starting as early as 2016, 2017, then the FDA came in and they were concerned about some of these types of procedures. Share a little bit more with our audience about the vaginal laser rejuvenation procedure, because what I understand is a number of women have actually benefited by that procedure. So who is that woman and what is the procedure? Why should she consider that as an option?
So vaginal laser rejuvenation, it has gone through a lot. Now the focus is more and more on the radio frequency waves, and which has done tremendous amount of benefit for women. Now there are different companies with this radio frequency machines, and the basically how that works is that radio frequency is a different wavelength frequency as compared to laser, and there is no pain, there is no downtime, and with which you are treating the entire vagina inside plus the vulva outside if there is a concern. What this does is that it stimulates growth of collagen and elastic tissue. So by stimulating it, it's giving it a little bit of a tightness, number one. It stimulates the lining of the vagina, which will increase the moisture in there. So very beneficial for women in perimenopause, menopause, women who are breastfeeding after childbirth, or who are, have had, say, chemo or radiation, which cause premature menopause. The commonest complaint for them is vaginal dryness or the loss of elasticity of the vagina. So these radio frequency devices will increase the lubrication by working on the lining of the vagina, will increase the collagen elastic tissue formation, and plus it increases the blood supply to the area and plus the nerve endings. So these treatments are really, I mean, there are so many women have benefited and will benefit if they go to a proper person with the right machine. It's no downtime, no pain, one treatment a month for 3 months, and then you just have a maintenance once a year. And then in the meantime, you use the vaginal lubricant, vaginal moisturizers, as you say. So to keep the moisturized vagina moisturized. So
And is patency important? So when I say patency, for those that are listening and that don't understand, I think about the stenosis and basically the vagina collapsing on itself. No
yes.
different than if you had an angioplasty and you want to keep the arteries open, right? So same thing with the vagina. Do you recommend doing something to keep that the vagina from collapsing, or is that not a problem?
No, absolutely. It's necessary because as you go through menopause, perimenopause, and if you're not using the vagina. That means you are not as sexually active because of the loss of elasticity and the loss of volume of the tissue. The opening of the vagina gets smaller and smaller. It gets stenotic. Because it's not elastic, if you have a penetrative sex or even if you're using a vibrator or something, it's going to be painful. So it's really important to continue a patency up there, because you, number one, you never know, you could get sexually active sometimes in your life. Age is no bar. But even if you decide not to, and even if you're using, say, dilators, or you're using vibrators for a self-satisfaction, you need that patency there. Plus, we need to do pap smear and pelvic exams on you. So when you go to a gynecologist for an exam, if it is painful, you're going to not go, right? That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, it's painful. I don't want to go. And we can miss some of the clinical condition just because you didn't go, because it was stenotic and painful. So very important to keep it patent.
Right. So, and when we designed our personal lubricant and vaginal moisturizer, I know that a number of products that are available in the market come in different types of embodiments, which don't necessarily include an applicator. We specially designed our applicator so that it is easy to insert, but it also addresses the patency issue, because if you're using the moisturizer and lubricant on a daily basis, you're also doing the insertion. So that is helping to maintain that patency. And if you, again, if you're doing this on a daily basis, you get a dual benefit. You get the help with the opening, and then you also get the moisturization. So we designed that with that particular issue in mind, and it seems to have a great benefit. At least we hear great reviews from our women that are using the product. Is there an age limit to these procedures? I mean, what is your thought on that?
There is not really an age limit to this. My patients have been from as young as, say, 16 to as old as 70 plus years old. Because if there is a concern and if it is bothering you, then absolutely you need to you know, we need to take care of it. Now, I do say for 16, but I had some patients younger than that. For example, if somebody has a very tight hymen or a tight hymenal ring and they cannot even put a tampon and it's painful, I'm not going to make her wait till she's 16, because she might be in sports. She might want to use a tampon. I would help her out. So really, there's no age limit to that. And if you are 70 and if there is an extra tissue which is bothering you because it's rubbing against the skin or it's causing chafing or you're getting infection, you want to take care of, absolutely do that. If you have vaginal dryness and stenotic at that age, but you want that concern to be addressed, absolutely do that. So there's no age limit to these.
So if you're listening to this and viewing this podcast, and you're a mother of a teenage daughter, and your daughter is complaining, and if she's seeing a gynecologist, the gynecologist has probably uncovered this. So she could be 14 or 15 years old, which is, you know, the age where I took my own daughter to a gynecologist for a checkup. But if she's complaining of these issues, perhaps it isn't a bad idea to explore this as an option. And, you know, no fear that this is going to increase her promiscuity or anything of that nature. She may be suffering. So I think that's really great advice. Personally speaking, if she can't use a tampon, that's also an issue for her, because we want to be able to have freedom to, you know, explore sports and other activities. And if that's interfering with her ability to do so, then yes, it's great advice to have that opportunity considered, as, you know, someone with your expertise could help that young woman. You mentioned earlier women who have had malignancies. Maybe they have had pelvic radiation, maybe they've had breast cancer. And I know that there, you know, there's still some question about whether hormone replacement therapy is a right choice for them. And this is really between the healthcare practitioner and the woman. There's been a lot of talk about this, you know, when you use local estrogen therapy, that it is not systemic. And unfortunately, that's not true. We know that everything is systemic, and the vagina is highly vascular, as you well know, as a physician and as someone who works in the region. And so these things do get absorbed over a course of time. So, what are your thoughts about this procedure in lieu of vaginal estrogen replacement therapy for women who have had malignancy?
I actually have a lot of women who did, you know, breast cancer is pretty common, and who had a treatment for breast cancer, radiation, chemo, went into early menopause, and now they are suffering with it. And they are very happy with these local treatments. Now, FDA just came out saying that you can use a small amount of estrogen vaginally, but a lot of people don't want to, or they might be at higher risk of using it. So if you do these procedures and then use local vaginal lubricants and moisturizer to maintain it, it works out really good.
Yeah. So we love to offer hope and we love to offer options. And you just have. You have given women hope that there are some procedures, there are practitioners like yourself that have the credentials that provide the skill level that renders not only the aesthetics to be beautiful, but also, more importantly, the functionality to really address the issues, the medical issues that underlie this, so that you can be supportive to them. I am just so grateful for your time this afternoon to do the podcast with me, Dr. Hardis. It's really been enlightening for me, and I'm sure that it will be enlightening to all of our viewers and listeners. So I just want to thank you once again for being my guest on the Love Me Avita podcast. I look forward to doing this again.
Thank you so much for inviting me as a guest on your podcast. I'm really, really grateful. And yes, anytime, please, I would love to come and talk about the procedures or any other questions your viewers may have.
Wonderful. Thank you. And remember to love me, Evita.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Love Me, Evita podcast. Love Me, Evita means love my life. And that is a mantra we should all live by. Please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to follow us on social media and on fempharma.com. Thank you and be well.